Blossoms on Radio 3. And Gary, that is my favourite song of the moment. And I was reading up the other day and I found out that Gary, the 8-foot gorilla who was nicked from a garden centre somewhere in the UK, they got him back a couple of months ago. So I guess I can't play that song anymore, but I will. Hello, Morris. How are you?
Yeah, very, very good. Isn't it amazing how quickly Tuesday comes around, Phil?
I know, it really is. I can't wait, too. I was reading your... I was swan-necking your blog this morning, and something really grabbed me, morrisfuturist.com, and that is that there is a thing called the nostalgia economy, but moreover, people seem to like to look back in time, probably a more realistic version of steampunk. And my immediate question, Morris, is, I thought we were trying to do all these breakthroughs. Is it just a bit bland in the future?
I don't think it's bland. I think this is just pure nostalgia.
Just that.
What it really is the future is different. The past was romantic and it was safe and we believe it was a much better time because everybody says that. You know. Yeah, look, I don't believe any of that, but we all do. I mean, we all have that romantic notion because we tend to forget the bad stuff as much as we can. We remember all the good stuff, and especially when we were growing up, and we always, or most of us, hanker for something we had as a child. You know, we talk about that holiday we went on, or the food we had, or the toy we played with, or something. And that really is what feeds this incredibly big industry that we honestly maybe wouldn't have even thought is an industry.
So it's not that we think, my goodness, the iPhone or whatever has reached implosion point and we just want to pick up the phone and call our mates. It's not like a real technological yearning for equipment we used to have.
No, I don't think so. I think it really is just a hankering for being that person we were when we had those things, or if we weren't around in those days, what we think those people might have been, easier at times. We often talk about the Jetsons, you know, the cartoon character Jetsons, for the same reason. It was in the 60s. It was nostalgic. It seemed a really nice, simple family doing incredible things in the future. It's the reference that we use mostly. It fits into that genre.
Okay, so is it the people who lived through these years that are getting nostalgic, or is there kids who've never even seen these things, like a CD, for goodness sake?
Yeah, it's a bit of both. It really is a bit of both. So the people that have lived through the era want their toys back, want all their bits and pieces back. And I was actually speaking this morning with somebody about this article also, who is a very much a young'un, and he was, you'll love this, Phil, I think, he was talking about he was going out to buy his record player for the first time. He's somebody in his early 20s, had listened to some vinyls because his parents had them, but for some reason the last few weeks hankered to have his own record collection, started buying one and was going out to buy a record player.
I think we've got a vinyl caveat because a lot of pros really like that. I don't know if they're hankering for the past. I mean, people do say it sounds warmer, but that's not just a gimmick. Vinyl seems to be
massive. No, it isn't. It's a huge industry. You could have given away all your record players 10 years ago, nobody would have taken them. Nobody wanted them. Of course, somebody would have, but mostly nobody wanted them. And today they're selling. They're selling for serious coin. They're selling for thousands and thousands of dollars. They've become a must-have for audiophiles. And we're going back into vinyl. Vinyl records now sell for a squillion, some of them.
Yeah.
It really is. I mean, if you want to have a sense for the economy, for the overall, what's called a nostalgia economy, it's currently globally worth $350 billion with a B.
How much of that is really functional? To a lot of people, vinyl, record players, records, they are really functional. It's not just like, hey, it's cool.
Some of it is, some of it's just purely aesthetic. So it really depends on what it is you're collecting.
Yeah.
But, and that's going up to $500 billion by 2030, which is why I'm talking about it, because I think it actually is, apart from everything else, a really interesting business industry. Can I give you some examples of stuff that's sold recently?
Yeah, cool.
I mean, this is kind of what triggered me into thinking more about this and writing an article and talking to you about it. The first generation iPhone, the very, very first one, 2008, it sold about 2 weeks ago at auction for $190,000.
Go on.
300 times what it originally cost. That doesn't, of course, include inflation and the rest of it.
Yeah.
I love these ones also. I don't know whether you remember back. Do you remember back to a thing called Beanie Babies? Were they big in Hong Kong, little kids' toys?
I really don't know. I mean, if it was 80s, if it was popular in Japan, I'm pretty sure it would have been.
So it was 80s and 90s. It was very much, it was like a bean bag, yeah, but it was a kid's toy. So it was kind of like a character type thing. There's a Princess Diana Beanie Baby that sold again about a week ago at auction for $500,000.
Can kind of understand that one.
And going into the tech world, the Super Mario Brothers, most people have heard of that franchise, been around forever and ever. This one was played on the old NES. the NES computers going back to the 80s. Yeah. It was the cartridge that you put in. So, Phil, firstly, I'm not looking for an answer, but rhetorically, how many people would have an NES computer to play this thing on? Oh, not yeah. many would be the answer. No.
But what, there's always but one kid in the class.
There's always one, but this is a kid with expensive toys because he, she, it, we don't know who it was, paid $2 million for that cartridge about 2 months ago.
Blimey. That's just crazy.
Everyone, go back into your Super Mario Brother game and see if you've got one.
It's funny, actually, you bring up a good point. A lot of the people you're talking about, their parents would have stuff like this lying around as like, oh, a piece of rubbish. Ha ha, no, if you've got an iPhone 1 and it's in good nick.
Oh, if you've got an iPhone 1, Phil, I mean, just if it's in the box, do not unbox it. If it's got the shrink wrap on it, say hallelujah to the gods and go and find somebody to sell it to or keep it as down the track. It's going to be worth a fortune.
How much did one recently go for, Morris, according to you?
So the first generation sold for $190,000 US.
Blimey. That's over 300 times its original retail price, I'm quoting Morris. That's ridiculous.
It is, isn't it? But still, we're talking about nostalgia and we're talking about people trying to buy back their history. Remember that a lot of these types of things, the iPhones and the Beanie Babies and My Robot, which is what I wrote this story about, a little toy robot I used to have, all of these things are now trying to be bought by people who are mostly baby boomers, not all of them, and they have a bit of coin with them. They're willing to buy back their history. And that's really what's fueled this industry. A whole lot of rich, and it is predominantly men. I know we shouldn't say, you know, it shouldn't be gender specific.
It's going to be, isn't it?
Basically. But it invariably is. It isn't entirely, but it invariably is, who have too much money, too much time, and too much sentiment on their hands, and are just going out and buying their toys back.
I suppose there are various degrees of this, Morris, this nostalgia economy, because we've mentioned stuff like the iPhone, going back even further, of course, the record player, even further, the old radiogram, phenomenal.
Yeah.
But on your list is the very first Tesla cars.
Yeah. So in this list, in this article, I've put together what I think will be the next big things. So what will we look back on in 20, 30 years and say, gee whiz, I wish I had one, and if I did, it would sell for a squillion. And one of them is absolutely, it has to be the first Tesla, very Tesla, like the first iPhone.
Yeah.
Because the first of anything that sells for a little while, that has some sales in it, is always the one. It's the equivalent of the Model T Ford. And I really think it will be the Model T Ford of its day. Yeah. The reality is they didn't make that many of that particular model because they upgraded and changed it quite quickly.
Uh-huh.
They were not a bespoke car, but they weren't really for mass sales like they are now. So I think it will be a collector's item, no doubt.
Well, right at the end of this list, if you want to find out, go to his blog. It's on morrisfuturist.com. Worth a read. Number 10 on your list is electric scooters, and they are back.
Yeah, they are big, big time. What we're seeing, I mean, it's interesting because in Melbourne, they've just been banned from our city centre and from one other suburb as well. So we've had a whole big kerfuffle over the last 2 or 3 years of people being knocked over, of them being left.
They go like the wind.
Yeah, and I don't know about you, because in some places this isn't true, but in ours it means you can dump it anywhere, literally. You know, wherever you get off, you can leave. It's kind of like kids with their it's like teenagers with their clothes. They just leave it everywhere. So for that reason, it's been banned in a couple of places. I'm talking about the publicly available ones, not the ones you can own. The ones you own, you can have anywhere. But electric scooters, going back to that point for me, I think will be like the vintage bicycles that we used to have, because they're relatively new now. I think they'll stay around for a long time, because we're beginning to see less and less people use public transport. I know it's not true in Hong Kong, but I'm talking about people really moving differently now. So scooters, I think, are a long-term vehicle that we will use, and therefore the very early versions will be worth a quid down the track.
Can you think of anything off the top of your head that people are using, something old school that people are using, because the modern version or the modern function is just not intuitive enough, and people actually are using something from years gone by?
I can't, but there must be.
Yeah.
It'd actually be interesting if any of our listeners can think
what
of
what was
one
meant
too.
To be a disruptor, and it isn't. And people, I mean, I think in many ways people are still pre-modelling iPhones. We keep mentioning that. I think it was you telling me they're a bit reticent to go out and buy the new one. They're going a couple of models back. But much more than that. I wonder if there's anything.
Yeah. There has to be some really old technologies that still work well. There are a whole lot of what are called, you know, mother's tales that work well, you know, remedies and things that have made a real big comeback now. So I imagine it's true with technology. Actually, it'd be interesting to find out. Let me see if I can put something together for our conversation.
Yeah, well, this is interesting, Maurice, because the bigger picture is, you know, if we take the four or five huge inventions or things of today, and people like you will say, well, this is the future I'm predicting in 10 years, X, Y, and Z. I wonder which one of those will just fall by the wayside. That's quite interesting.
But because they fall by the wayside, actually could make them interesting in this conversation of nostalgia.
Oh, yeah.
Because often it is something that's not around anymore, that you hanker for.
What do you miss?
And that I think things like Google Glasses, which is something we don't really have a lot of, smartwatches. I've said smartwatches, for instance, I think will be really popular down the track. But I absolutely know that in 10 years' time, they will not exist like we have them today. They just don't make sense in the way we have them. Mm. So I think smartwatches will disappear as a technology form. They'll be replaced by other things, and the technology and things they give us will still absolutely be around, but they'll be collected in different ways.
See, that's so funny, Maurice. I mean, the smartwatch, a watch you have to do something to. Remember 1980s, the Seiko or whatever they were, Casio watches, you had to press a button. That's kind of retro.
Yeah. Do you remember those old calculator watches that you used to have? It was always a gold strap that had them. The Seiko was big, as you said, Canon used to.
And then the Victorians would just lift their timepiece, have a look and put it back down again. You know, easier.
It would, but the whole notion of the advent of the clock is actually fascinating. Maybe a conversation for another day, because time didn't really exist in the way that we understand it. Now, being a minute-by-minute thing that most people thought of or counted, it really only existed in about the 1700s, 1800s for most people to be able to look at time. So timepieces are actually an interesting way to look at history.
Dad, this is completely random. I was talking to one of the other guys a few days ago about that in medieval times, people would sleep twice a night, a little bit at the beginning, get up, do some chores, go back to bed. I wonder if that's got anything to do with it.
It could well be. Our entire notion of the way we run our lives is based on really only a 200-year, not even invention.
Oh, yeah.
We really didn't know what time was. It didn't make much sense to us. We didn't need it. We followed the earth. We followed the patterns. Most of us lived on the land. If the land needed something, either cows needed feeding or cropping or whatever else, we just did it. I mean, we didn't look at 9 o'clock, 12 o'clock or 3 o'clock. We just did it.
Let's go down a little bit more on your article, because Maurice has written it all up really tidily with headings and stuff. Know your audience's emotional triggers. Now, I haven't read the paragraph. Can you explain what you mean by that?
I can. So as often, I try and put this into a business perspective.
Right.
And what I'm suggesting here is that for some people, it might be worth looking at as a business, one to start collecting now for future, but also as a full-blown Etsy or something else. And one of the things I've said there, which is common across all businesses, is you really need to know what your audience's emotional triggers are. Nostalgia has absolutely no purpose. It doesn't, in the form of being able to keep you alive or giving you sustenance or anything else. It's purely an emotional buy.
Mm.
So you have to understand what's the emotional buy behind it. What was it that the people of the time thought this thing was, and how did they feel about it? And the stronger the emotional tie, like before when you made that comment about Lady Di, which was absolutely right.
Yeah.
We loved Lady Di, absolutely loved, loved, loved. Anything with her would have... we think sold really well, and the baby beanie is an example of those two things.
I think people might talk nostalgically about toys that were essentially quite dangerous, but people miss them.
Oh, yeah.
Caps.
Compared to today,
anything that explodes, blah, 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 you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the toys of yesterday, compared to today, were actually quite dangerous. We didn't think so in those days, didn't really worry much about them. But most of my toys, because I'm that old, were metal. I mean, the really early toys
and
I
painted with lead.
Yeah, a good bit of lead that you could suck on, you know, because as a child, that's what you did with every toy that you had.
Yeah.
All of those things were quite normal. The batteries in them were really easy to get into. Again, never thought about those things. We didn't, thankfully, have the small batteries, which would have made it even more lethal. But batteries were easy to get into. The parts were, you know, you could take them apart. So certainly I don't think they were constructed by today. But having said that, I put on my old person's hat and say that in my day, they were made much better.
Yes, yes. I'm trying to. So we've got like 3 or 4 minutes left here, and I'm trying to sort of get some tiny takeaway here. And I think safety, in one way or another, is an issue. Like, do you remember the big children's playgrounds where you could have killed yourself by just looking the wrong way?
I do. I actually lament those. I wish some of them would come back. I have this notion, and taking my granddaughter now to many playgrounds, that the playgrounds are too safe.
That's kind of what I was getting at. Have we? Yeah. I have no opinion whatsoever, but is that what people are thinking?
I don't know, but it's certainly what I'm thinking. I mean, of course, I don't want any harm to come to her or any child that plays in them, but I think we have over-sanitised our playgrounds. There's something to be said with, again, risk aversion, being absolutely as careful as we can be, to allowing children to climb and play and explore. And I don't want them to fall over and hurt themselves at all. But the occasional little dingle that doesn't cause permanent damage is not necessarily a terrible thing on a one-off caused by some kind of exuberance.
If you've just joined us, I'm having a chinwag with Morris Misolowski. I'm wondering if people who haven't lived through a certain era are more nostalgic for it. Perhaps the rockabilly scene, and there's masses of that in Australia.
Yeah, it really depends on what the thing is. Going back to the example of the record player and the person I spoke to this morning, absolutely, it was not something that was in his life ever.
Yeah.
It was in his parents and grandparents. But he feels terribly nostalgic about it now because it was something that in the homes that he grew up in, they were a part of it. So there's still that nostalgia that even though you personally didn't use it or value it at the time, for whatever reason today it brings back memories of other times, other people, or maybe you just think it's really cool because people had those things. And around this notion too, Phil, it's not just these nostalgic toys that we're talking about. Vintage clothes have come back in a big way.
Yes.
Going to vintage stores have really become a big thing.
I bet it's massive in Melbourne.
Oh, it's huge. I mean, really, you would have found one or two stores 5 years ago that were called thrift shops, yeah, and they were basically secondhand, and very, very few people went into them because of the stigma attached to it, which was nonsense, of course.
Yeah.
Today, they are absolutely busting to the gills. Everybody but everybody is talking about their wonderful find that they had at these thrift shops. Again, it's very much on this nostalgic viewpoint of going back and trying to find your Auntie Millie's old tea set or something for a couple of dollars, or the clothes that were worn in the 50s or 60s.
Yeah.
It has come back very big time. Also, we're going through negative times now, Phil, and often these nostalgic things become more important when life's a bit tough. You want to go back and find euphemistically that, you know, that warm blanket. I'm not talking about just the blanket, but, you know, that feeling of being hugged and loved and more simple. And that's often when nostalgia will sell well too.
It's funny, isn't it, when you talk about going forward, the future, 10 years down the line, a lot of our conversation is about conversation, about communication. And in a funny way, that's got a lot to do with this nostalgic drivers too. The telephone book, you know,
yeah,
just let me leave that with you.
Yeah, the telephone book. I mean, quickly, my wife, when I first met her, was a typist. Who was even one of those days? I mean, incredible, 120 words a minute. We have her old typewriter under our stairs. When my children were very, very small, you know, 4 and 5, we took it out from under the stairs. They had no idea where it was, and they were looking for the screen and could not figure out how this thing worked and where did you plug it in.
So, to wrap up, Morris's article, The Nostalgia Economy, How Retro is Reshaping the Future of Business. You may take the mickey about our conversation right now, but it's big business, isn't it, Morris?
It's huge business. And in my article, I have a passion plea. I'm looking for the robot I used to play with. I describe him there, and I'm trying to find him. So anyone that's seen him around, please let me know.
Let's leave it there.
I'd love to buy him back.
Take care, Morris. Talk to you next week. Lovely. Right.